May it please the court, counsel, Alan Epstein, on behalf of defendant Leslie New, registration number 10473. The issue on appeal is whether the trial court erred in precluding, under the collateral source rule, defendant's damages expert from testifying to the reasonableness of the amounts billed by plaintiff's medical providers and to non-medical expenses embedded in the medical bills. Under the collateral source rule, as interpreted by the Supreme Court in Sunahara, Crossgrove, and Jepson, the amounts that plaintiff's insurer pays for medical providers is inadmissible under the pre-verdict component of the rule. In this case, plaintiff filed a motion in limine to preclude defendant's damages expert, Ms. Helsel, from testifying to what Anthem Blue Shield paid to plaintiff's medical providers. And the trial court granted plaintiff's motion in limine, but invited defendant to file an offer of proof. Defendant then filed a motion for reconsideration, accompanied with an offer of proof, explaining that Ms. Helsel would not testify to the amounts paid by Anthem, but rather to the reasonableness of the amounts billed by plaintiff's medical providers. Ms. Helsel would have testified that plaintiff asserted approximately $11,000 in medical costs that were either undocumented, impermissible, or billed in excess of what 8 out of 10 doctors would bill for the same services. The trial court denied defendant's motion for reconsideration without comment. In Volunteers of America versus Garden Schwartz, the Supreme Court held that the reasonableness of amounts plaintiff's medical providers bill may be challenged by a defendant. Quoting from the Illinois Court of Appeals decision in Arthur v. Couture, the Supreme Court held that defendants may, if they choose, dispute the amount billed as unreasonable. Plaintiff does not challenge or disagree with this proposition, but advances several arguments in response to defendant's appeal of the trial court's ruling, all of which I contend are red herrings. Plaintiff argues that the trial court's order denying defendant's motion for reconsideration did not preclude defendant from calling Ms. Helsel to dispute the reasonableness of the medical bills, because plaintiff's motion in limine only sought preclusion of the amounts billed. But defendant's motion for reconsideration and offer of proof detailed that Ms. Helsel's proffer testimony disputed the reasonableness of the amounts billed, not paid.
Did the offer of proof make clear that her testimony on reasonableness would not be based in any way on what insurance companies paid?
It was absolutely crystal clear. What Ms. Helsel attested in the offer of proof was that what plaintiff's motion in limine referred to deposition testimony of Ms. Helsel in a different case in Boulder, in which she had testified in that deposition that she thought that a system called MedCheck relied on what insurance companies agreed to pay for particular services. But the basis of her opinions in this case, as stated in her offer of proof, was that MedCheck uses the Fair Health and Ingenix databases, which examine the amounts billed for medical service by geographic zip code areas. Nowhere in her offer of proof was there even a suggestion that she was going to testify similarly to what was stated in the deposition testimony to which plaintiffs refer in their brief.
So, Mr. Epstein, pardon me for interrupting. Here's my concern, and please help me with it. The original motion in limine was pretty narrow, paid versus billed. You've now said that that was not what Ms. Helsel would have testified to at trial. So when you file a motion, not you, but when the defendant files a motion for reconsideration, and that concerns other things rather than paid versus billed, and the court simply denies the motion for reconsideration, what's the court doing? Isn't the court simply saying that, well, this pay versus bill thing is done?
Well, only if you ignore what was stated in the motion for reconsideration.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but here's my specific problem. If the original order has nothing to do with the other information in the motion for reconsideration, then are you really asking the court to reconsider its order?
I suppose it could have been characterized as a motion for clarification, but I think that's stating the same thing. It's semantics. By denying the motion for reconsideration, presumably the court was denying what was being requested in the motion for reconsideration, which was defendant intends to introduce evidence regarding the reasonableness of the amounts billed, not the amounts paid. So the court would have had to ignore what it was the defendant was asking, and the original order denying the motion in limine invited plaintiff, the defendant, to submit an offer of proof, and the offer of proof stated that Ms. Helsel was going to testify with respect to the amounts billed being unreasonable. So the court would have, if the court was addressing the merits of the motion for reconsideration, then it necessarily precluded Ms. Helsel's testimony in its entirety. In fact, the order denying the motion for consideration stated, this matter is before me on defendant's motion to reconsider, plaintiff's motion to preclude Donna Helsel from testifying, period. Not, there's no qualification there. Defendant's motion to reconsider is denied. The court, I think the court should have or would have granted the motion if there was any question about what it is that the defendant was requesting.
But Mr. Essing, the title of that order was based just on how defense counsel presented it as a motion precluding. The prior order itself didn't bar the expert from testifying or preclude the expert from testifying in toto. So that's just really regurgitating what the defendant captioned the motion, isn't that correct?
Well, a motion for reconsideration of the court's order denying or granting plaintiff's motion in limine with respect to the paid versus billed issue, that defendant couldn't introduce evidence of the amounts that were paid, would have necessarily been directed to reconsideration of that issue. But that's not what the motion for reconsideration was directed to. It was a motion to clarify, okay, defendant can't introduce evidence of the amounts that were paid, but can't we introduce evidence of the amounts that were billed? And the court said no. The court didn't say you. I mean, I think it's really splitting hairs to say that the trial court intended to permit defendants to introduce Ms. Helsel's testimony when the specific testimony or specific ruling on the motion to reconsider was this motion, the matter is before me on defendant's motion to reconsider, plaintiff's motion to preclude Donna Helsel from testifying, period. Not to anything. That's the way I read it. I don't think it could be any clearer that the court was saying Ms. Helsel can't testify. And I guess it could be characterized, the motion to reconsider could have been characterized as a motion to clarify that defendant be permitted to introduce evidence that is admissible. But I think, again, that's form over substance. Um, plaintiff also argues that defendant wasn't prejudiced because the jury purportedly did not consider the medical evidence, and or the medical evidence was presented at trial in the form of a summary in Plaintiff's Exhibit 7. Well, the jury necessarily considered it because it is undisputed that the summary was admitted at trial. Defendant designated all exhibits admitted into evidence at trial in her designation of record. Exhibit 7 is in the record as an admitted exhibit, and the summary contains the $11,000 in medical costs that Ms. Helsel would have testified was unreasonable had she been permitted to testify. The fact that bills themselves weren't admitted is irrelevant. First, defendant had no incentive to object to a billing summary under Rule of Evidence 106 once the trial court precluded Ms. Helsel's testimony, and Ms. Helsel could have used the summary itself to challenge the reasonableness of the plaintiff's medical costs by explaining which parts of the summary were unreasonable and why after establishing a foundation for that testimony. Defendant requests that the court reverse and remand with directions for a new trial on economic damages. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Thomas Neville, attorney registration number 35011. I'm here with Ryan Weiss, trial counsel, on behalf of Kelly and Terry Harmon. And the central issue that I believe the court needs to address is, where is the order that prevented Ms. Helsel from testifying? I think that by looking at the order of the events here, the court can see that Judge McGahee never entered an order prohibiting her from testifying. And in the absence of an order prohibiting her from testifying, Judge McGahee never abused his discretion.
Why isn't it a reasonable inference that denial of the motion to reconsider, which included an offer of proof, at least prohibited her from testifying as to those matters specifically set forth in the offer of proof?
Well, Your Honor, the problem with that assumption is that assumes that the effect of a denial of a motion for reconsideration is to change the court's prior rulings. But the court's prior ruling did not prohibit her from offering the testimony.
Yeah, but didn't the motion to reconsider change the playing field somewhat because it included now an offer of proof that hadn't been apparently part of the original briefing schedule?
Well, Your Honor, I think that in a different case, that argument might be one that could be made. I think there's an important issue with the motion for reconsideration that's being glossed over here. At no time in the motion for reconsideration did defendant direct the trial court's attention to the specific parts of the offer of proof that are purported to bring Ms. Helsel's testimony into the realm of what's admissible under the collateral source trilogy of cases. So paragraph 18 of her offer of proof and affidavit, the first time the defendant cites that to any court as a basis for the admission of her testimony was in the reply brief before this court. It is not mentioned in the motion for reconsideration. So there's a question as to whether Judge McGahee's attention was properly directed to the reasons and bases for Ms. Helsel's opinions. And this is further complicated by the fact that the first time that Ms. Helsel disclosed the Fair Health database and the eugenics database as bases of her opinions was in that offer of proof. If you look at Exhibit A, the motion for reconsideration, that is Donna Helsel's expert report, she doesn't mention any of these databases on which she relies, and she doesn't set forth the basis and reasons for her calculation that of reasonable and necessary, reasonable and customary charges. So even if it was error on the part of Judge McGahee, and I don't think it was because he never said she couldn't testify, but even so, there's a separate basis present in this record that supports the judge's decision, which is that she failed to comply with her Rule 26 A1 or A2B1 obligations.
You filed an opposition to the motion to reconsider?
We did not. There was insufficient time.
Okay.
Motion for reconsideration, though, I think, here's another issue with this. Defendant chose to formulate her motion for reconsideration as a motion for reconsideration of the trial court's order granting plaintiff's motion in limine to preclude Donna Hetzel from testifying. It's not relief the plaintiff ever requested. It's not relief that the court ever granted. The only party that determined that Donna Hetzel couldn't testify was the defendant. And so it's improper to grant a reversal in a situation where the judge never exercised his discretion. So how could he abuse that discretion? The only party that made that determination was the defendant. On a related note, there's the question of whether the defendant has adequately shown any prejudice. The issue here is that Donna Hetzel's report says this dollar amount of some unspecified amount of billing was improper, and this dollar amount of some other unspecified amount of bills was improper. The defendant hasn't shown that the actual medical bills to which Ms. Hetzel was going to testify were ever admitted to the jury.
Why does that matter if the particular numbers that she quarreled with are included in the summary?
Because I would submit to the court that we can't actually be sure that the numbers she quarreled with, based on the record here, were in that summary. And in fact, as to, for example, the $930 from Select Physical Therapy, those bills were never submitted to the jury.
Well, but my question doesn't go to the bills. My question is just the gross numbers. Does the summary as a gross number encompass the subsets of numbers that she quarreled with?
No.
Or we can't tell?
We can't tell from this record. Unfortunately, her expert witness report doesn't include, or what was submitted to Judge Mugahey was not included, or does not include her analysis. There's a separate document that I understand exists in which, for example, she objected to a $31,000 bill from Midtown Surgical Center and said that $23,774 was the proper amount. But the amount revealed on Exhibit 7 is only $20,832.
Exhibit 7 is the summary?
Is the summary. What that means then is, and again, I apologize that this isn't part of the record. We had asked that her expert reports be included, and they're not part of the record. But assume, hypothetically, that she said, of $30,000, $7,000 is incorrect, and only $20,000 was submitted to the jury. There's no way for defendant to demonstrate that the objectionable amount, that $7,000 that she said was improper, was included in the bills that were actually shown to the jury. And because defendant hasn't met its burden of demonstrating the prejudice, reversal is improper. Looking at her expert report, which is Exhibit A of the motion for reconsideration, it is pages 258 to 260 of the record. You'll see that she says X dollars, but she doesn't classify which bills that X dollar amount is related to. And that means that as the court sits here now, it cannot be sure that any amount to which Donna Hetzel objected was actually submitted to the jury.
So the summary did not include all of plaintiff's medical expenses?
Correct. And in fact, as is often the case in cases like this, prior to trial, plaintiff's counsel sat down with defense counsel and worked through that proposed summary. And when defendant's counsel objected to certain things, those bills were removed, and other bills were added in. And at the end of the process, defendant stipulated to the summary, at which point plaintiff released the witnesses that it had endorsed and subpoenaed to come testify as to those issues. And this gets to a further issue of preservation. Because the defendant stipulated, she decided not to cross-examine those witnesses. And so plaintiff is now in a difficult position because we were given the opportunity to have the testimony introduced that would have established the reasonableness of those bills.
Mr. Neville, on that same note, are you contending at all that they've waived this issue because of the stipulation?
You are. I think that is, it is at the very least a failure to preserve, if not an active waiver. I think that defendants have also not preserved the issue of this, the difference between what Ms. Heltzel had testified to previously and what she was going to testify to. Her offer of proof is the first sign that there's an indication that she's using something other than what insurance companies have billed. It's not in her expert witness disclosures. It's not in the argument that was made at the hearing before the court entered its order. They don't cite to specific portions of that offer of proof in the motion for reconsideration. The first time, and I think I said this before, the very first time the defendant directs any court's attention to Ms. Heltzel's recalculation or recalibration of how she calculates what's reasonable, usual, and customary is in their reply brief before this court.
Okay, so you're saying that there's nothing in the motion to reconsider that says, Judge, we're changing our presentation of how this witness will testify?
Correct.
Please reconsider on that basis. They don't make that argument.
Correct.
Okay.
And so essentially they put the burden on the judge to come through the affidavit, the offer of proof, and ferret out the one paragraph. And in fact, it's one sentence in the one paragraph that indicates that she's not going to testify about collateral source issues. And I've reviewed the record, and you can tell from my brief that I was focused on the collateral source issues. I spent a lot of time arguing about aggregated collateral source issues. And it's not until the reply brief that it becomes clear that really the focus has shifted now to what bills have been submitted to these databases, which is a further problem because I would certainly like to have the opportunity to do some factual inquiry as to how the data comes out of those databases, what's selected for inclusion. We don't know, and part of that is because it wasn't properly disclosed. Judge McGahee never entered an order precluding her from testifying. And in the absence of some exercise of his discretion to that end, he cannot have abused his discretion. Defendant made a tactical decision not to call Donna Heltzel to come testify. That was a decision the defendant made, and it's an invited error, if there was any error at all. They failed to show that she would have testified as to any specific bill that was actually submitted to the jury. And they failed to properly disclose the reasons and bases for her opinions. They failed to preserve the argument that her testimony did not violate the collateral source rule. I mean, look at the actual order entered by Judge McGahee. It is, she may not use the amount that insurance companies have paid to challenge the reasonableness of medical bills. That order is exactly congruent with Crossroad, Sonohara, Jepson, and 10-1-135. That's not an abuse of discretion. And so, in the absence of any error on the part of the trial court, the judgment needs to be affirmed. Thank you. And I'm going to cede the rest of my time to Mr. Herman. Mr. Weiss, if there are any questions.
Thank you. I just wanted to talk real quick about a little of the chronology of what happened here. I'm counsel for the Harmons, and on March 5th, 2012, Donna Heltzel makes her expert, or the defense makes their expert disclosures. Donna Heltzel is listed. She lists her testimony as a reduction on some of the bills for what's usual and customary. She doesn't say what's usual and customary other than that she uses MedCheck. She does not mention until after the court had already answered his motion in limine that she's using these databases. That first comes out in her reply. But her expert disclosure was filed on March 5th, 2012. The Supreme Court rules on those trilogy of collateral source cases on April 30th, 2012. Based on that Supreme Court case, I filed my motion in limine for Ms. Harmon, and the court ruled on that motion in limine after hearing. All these issues were discussed at a hearing on May 10th, 2012, and then the court's ruling came out one day later. After that, it's my impression that we have this offer of proof that has a new foundation to what's usual and customary. No longer is she saying this is based on what insurance companies routinely pay, because we had a Supreme Court case come out after that. So there's a disclosure problem that was pointed out. I think that timing is critical, that the Supreme Court cases came out on April 30th, 2012 at the hearing. Judge McGahee was well aware of those three Supreme Court cases and basically said, I'm going to defer to the Supreme Court cases. They were recent, they're timely rulings, and the point is there's not going to be an end run around the collateral source rule by having a repricing expert come and testify. And there was a chance for cross-examination. The cross-examination did take place when Dr. Hatzidakis and Dr. Jones testified. They were questioned both by me and by Teresa Seymour if their bills were reasonable, customary. Questions were asked about their bills. Why was the bill this much? Well, in this case, Ms. Harmon had to stay in the hospital, and that's on the bills. So a lot of that stuff came out. There was questions about what's reasonable because people testified about their bills. The doctors testified why they billed like they did. And that's what I wanted to add, and I think that covers everything. Thank you very much.
Well, the first time the issue of whether there was proper disclosure is being raised for the first time in this oral argument. The plaintiff's never argued that before. And the issue of Ms. Helsel's testimony, what she was going to say, came up because plaintiff's motion in limine said she is going to testify about what she stated in a deposition in a different case regarding what she thought MedCheck relied on in that case. The motion for reconsideration responded with, no, that's not what she's going to testify with. She's going to testify that MedCheck uses the Fair Health and Ingenics databases, which examine the amounts billed for medical service by geographical zip code areas. By denying defendant's motion for reconsideration, the court is saying, without explaining why, Ms. Helsel will not be permitted to testify at all, even though what she is testifying to was specifically sanctioned by the Supreme Court in Volunteers of America versus Garden Schwartz. The issue of disclosure is coming up for the first time now. Plaintiff never argued that Ms. Helsel didn't adequately disclose her opinions below and didn't argue it in their answer brief on appeal. To address once again the issue of whether the trial court's order did or did not preclude Ms. Helsel from testifying, the court's order on defendant's motion for reconsideration says the motion to reconsider plaintiff's motion to preclude Donna Helsel from testifying is denied. The court didn't qualify. The court could have easily said Ms. Helsel may not testify to what the original motion in limine was directed to. However, she may testify to what is permissible under Colorado law, which is that the reasonableness of the amounts billed may be challenged. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We'll issue a written opinion in due course.